Hey, and welcome back. In this episode, we welcome a very special guest, Genevieve, aka Evie Jones. Genevieve is a solo performance artist, as well as a PhD student studying interdisciplinary and humanities, as well as my cousin. And today, she is here to discuss how elements of solo performance art can help us learn more about resistance, suffering, vulnerability, facing fears, and how this translates into the sexual wellness and exploration space. So without further ado, let's get to it and welcome Genevieve to the show. Hello, Genevieve. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Thank you.
Well, I'm excited to have you on the show because you're my first family member on the show, and this is going to be a lot of fun.
I know. I'm super excited.
Well, today we're going to be talking about you yourself. You're a performance artist and you're also a PhD student. And we're going to be getting into areas like suffering, vulnerability, sense of self, and facing fears, which are all things that I think more people really need to talk about with themselves, because suffering and vulnerability is something that we find hard to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I do think there's probably a lot of progression in that aspect, and there are more discussions surrounding vulnerability, but it's still uncomfortable, you know, even just to be vulnerable. And this is the area that I like really enjoy leaning into rather than straying away from, because I do think in this culture, in our society today, it's really actually integral for us to be more open and be more vulnerable with each other. And that's like, those are the areas we need to lean into rather than stray away from. But of course, at the end of the day, like, we are suffering as a collective. Mental health across the board in North America is a huge issue. And there's way too much pressure on all of us to accomplish, I don't know, like things that we don't really need to accomplish. So I think like, yeah, like I choose to fill my life with as many things that as I desire, because to me, that's a more fulfilling life. So now, for me, I do solo work, like solo performance art. But performance is always about opening yourself up and being vulnerable and tapping into yourself. And so when you take these concepts into the, you know, the realm of sex and kink and kinky wellness, you know, not only is it something that can be very therapeutic, it can really ground you and connect you to yourself, your partner. Performance for me is truly about vulnerability, among like many other things, but that's also what sex is for me. Like, sex is human connection. And so it's nothing else. Like, well, it is other things, but it's human connection. Like, that's it. So without vulnerability and play, you're missing something.
Yes. And I think that I do believe that we are missing something if you're not letting yourself be vulnerable and playing, because it allows you to learn more about yourself and just kind of like the world around you. And you can change it. You can shift your narrative from maybe a more negative experience to a more positive experience by kind of like redoing whatever it is that you want to express or what story you want to tell.
Yeah, and that's, I think, for sure where play comes in too. Like, when you resist something, that's a certain story. And actually, it's okay to resist, but it's a different story than if you didn't resist something. And this is where, play, I think, becomes a part of like how we're interacting, how we're connecting, the level of, I guess, trust we have with ourselves and our partners.
Well, resistance, you focus on resistance and vulnerability a lot in your work. And so how do you work on resistance on the stage?
Yeah, so resistance is interesting for sure. And I think it's also extremely interesting in kink and in the world of sex. So a lot of the foundational ideas and theories of my work would be like how Brené Brown looks at vulnerability. But Brené Brown, like her sort of main point is that it's more about shame resilience. So she obviously like speaks of shame and how shame is affecting us all. And we can overcome that shame by becoming resilient to it. And that empathy, things like empathy and compassion, are the key antidotes to becoming sort of resilient to shame. Whereas I kind of look at that and I'm like, well, if you take all of these concepts and you take this society that's suffering and a very shameful culture, unnecessarily shameful, and we put that on stage, we take the or we put that into our we have we already carry it in our bodies, and we kind of try to do something through liveness and live performance, then in fact, that may be a way of not just becoming resilient to shame, but trying to resist it. So I share my life experiences on stage through Mommy Shark. I engage with my audiences. But what I'm also doing while I'm performing is becoming as close as possible as I can to a sense of combating shame and becoming like and resisting it and kind of pushing it away. And I do that just, through my words, through my performance, through my body, and with audience interaction. It's very reliant on like the audience.
And it, you have a gift of like connecting with them so easily. I saw that. You, it's fun. I like even the short performance I saw, I think that's what it is. It's also getting other people to be like, you know what? I can connect with someone that I might not know in still a fun way.
Well, and that's like the beauty of liveness, right? Like it's like you, and also maybe the beauty of theater, like it's there and then it's gone. But this is like the shit that I live for. Like this is like, okay, like if we can just people, I, there's no, sometimes it's difficult. Like there's no end goal. But if people walk away having seen themselves in the work or having if they've touched or like attempted to touch what I'm trying to touch, that's good. That's like
Yeah.
juicy stuff.
Well, I like your point about the no end goal because I'd like to stress that back to sex and even being performative in sex as well, because sometimes we get a little bit too, gung ho on some ending or some climax or some sort of main thing when really it's just the journey of the play, of the experience. It doesn't have to have an end goal to make a connection. It's that's the big part of it.
Yeah, actually, that's all of it. Yeah, for sure. Because then we're just putting more pressure and more pressure. Like people are so quick to get to the end. Women, oh my God, like I can't tell you like how many times I've faked an orgasm. I can't tell you like how many women I know have faked an orgasm. Like of like this is it. But staying in the moment with someone, like allowing it to just be what it is, like the resistance in that. For me, also, like in sex, the resistance is a kink. Like the resistance and the desire, and if you're in attunement, I think these concepts, yes, are related to performance, but they're just also related to trusting yourself. And that's also where I would say our fears and facing our fears comes in. Because on stage, I face my fears, and in sex, I'm facing my fears. If you're not doing this, like, what are you doing? Like, you need to allow yourself to have the journey.
Well, to your point, I would say that if you aren't having an avenue to face your fears, then you aren't growing. So whether that's in performance art or in your sexual life or going out there and trying new things or just putting yourself out there, you have to face fears. It's a part of life. And if you try to go around a life where you're not facing fears, I don't, that cannot, I don't know, that that is not a life. Then you'd be petrified to leave your home.
Yeah, but you know what's sad about that? My cousin, so many people live their life like this. It's so sad. And that's, I think, why empathy and things like compassion are crucial. I think women certainly, there might be a danger in kind of claiming that all women are empathetic or all women have compassion and that it's on or that it's like women's responsibility. I think that's the danger. But I do think that it might be a slightly more foreign to men to lean into having empathy for themselves because of like the lack of resources or because of like just the way they've been conditioned. But ultimately, empathy, seeing yourself in another and then taking that potentially further is crucial in how we move forward, you know, as a collective. Because again, with suffering and facing our fears, like, you know, I think that's how you conquer things. That's how you learn things. You're exactly right. That's how you grow. But there's grief. There's like also a lot of collective grief because, yeah, I see a lot of disconnection, you know, frustration, disconnected to our bodies and how that's playing out in like people's sex lives.
Or just in
And
general, like
or just in general,
the
like, but sex, but I guess like for me, sex is connected. Everything is like connected back to sex. Like it's always there. Like I'm a sexual creature. I'm a sexual being. If something in my life is not fulfilling me outside of the sexual space, I'm not gonna like be as fulfilled in the sexual space. So it's like it's all kind of mixed into one big pot. But when you turn away from your fear, or even if you're like just going, like not conscious, treading water, the rat race, then it's sad. And I unfortunately can spot that and can see that. And I just want nothing to do with it. But it's tough. It's common.
It's common and it's encouraged in this, I feel like, to live racing, what you said. It's encouraged to constantly have no time for yourself. Don't slow down. Don't think. Don't have, like, don't reassess. Like, no one does in, not saying that no one does inward work, but a lot of people don't have the time to even sit with their own thoughts because of how things are structured, like 8 hours a day to work and then to and from and groceries and everything else in between. But we're missing out again on that play, on that growth, on that experience of what life could be, on even missing out on being vulnerable. Because yes, there's going to be times when you're vulnerable and it's going to hurt, but there's going to be times where you're vulnerable and it was so worth it. And the gain that you'll get from being vulnerable is 10 times better than any pains that you may have experienced. And you're going to experience it when you're vulnerable sometime.
Yeah, and that's where their courage and your power lies. Like, and that is not just what I want to do in sex and in my own kinks and in my own desires. It's also what I want to do on stage, not as like the same thing, obviously. But well, I mean, I guess I could
You
because
could,
I also
yeah.
well, I also have a kink of being watched, but again, I'm a performer, so. But like I think when there's like an opportunity to like be vulnerable and tap into your power and rise to your courage, that is something in life that's actually like a gift and like something is being offered to you. So you're either going to take the opportunity or you're not. But for me, like, of course, I always have to lean into the vulnerable space and the uncomfortable space, because I mean, I get off on that.
To your point about rising to the triumph or rising to the occasion or bringing out your courage, if we are not exercising our power of our own hero's journey, then we're just going to feel stuck in that victim mindset. We're not going to have motivation. We're going to look down or negative on the world around us when in reality it's not like that. But we don't encourage avenues to play out our own hero's journey. And you can do that through performance, art, and sex and everything in between. But I'm not saying that people need to go on stage to do it, but this is why it's so important that you can turn your bedroom or your own home into your own little performance area where you can
Yes.
overcome your journeys or your troubles,
Yes.
whatever it is.
Yes. Yes. It's a priority and it's a shift and whatever it takes to get you there, people need to pay attention to. But yeah, anyone can do it. Anyone can begin their healing journey with whatever feels good and looks good to them. And performing, yeah, it's fulfilling. But if it wasn't in my life, there would be other ways of like filling that cup or like, yeah, rising and stepping into that type of courage. I do think vulnerability is courage. I think that that's what makes us women, men, I think that's what makes us powerful for
Courage.
ourselves.
It is power. It is power. Because when it's so difficult to share your truths with people, because truth is so objective nowadays, it's one of those things like whose truth is what, blah, blah, blah. But
yeah, post-structuralism. We're still in the post-structuralist world and culture. Well, maybe we're now in maybe post-truth, but post-structuralism, the idea that like, of course, like there are multiple truths.
And what else is that? Well, I've never heard that term before.
Post-structuralism, it's sort of like, it came after, I think, constructivism. It's like the idea that, you know, nothing can be one thing. There is not one truth. So, you know, for example, at one point, post-structuralists were heavily fought against by feminists or the feminist movement, because feminists would say, no, this is the way it is. This is the way we've been treated. You can't change that. And this is our belief and this is what we're fighting for. Because post-structuralists can kind of also have this reputation to take this like blasé attitude, like, well, actually, like everyone believes something different and there is not one universal truth. There are multiple truths based on so many factors. And so I guess I'm somewhere in the middle with this, because it can get, you can really like start to nitpick and go really deep into essentially the idea that there are no universal truths because of X, Y, Z, and because of this, that actually like there's a myriad of truths out there. And truth is subjective. And that's when truth becomes abstract, which it is. But it's also when you place that next to like fact, or what is a fact. Or so it's boring, Dana.
I was going to say, no, I like it. I was going to say, wow, lots of truths, all this chat. So I was like, you know what? I believe that. I was like, that sounds pretty interesting to me. So that's cool.
Yeah.
So when it comes to your performances, and how would you say that this has affected your sense of self, or what would you tell someone how this can help someone gain a sense of self?
Yeah, I mean, it keeps me going. I've always wanted to experience myself deeper and deeper and deeper, because, again, I'm like very fulfilled with my interpersonal relationships. Like that's what fulfills my life. So if I'm like connected to myself, then I can like be the best person in a friendship, in motherhood, in a relationship. So with that and always knowing that, I didn't just get to Mommy Shark. It was a journey. Mommy Shark is it for me now. And, or like, you know,
right now
it's what I do now.
Yeah.
And so with this idea of like purging what's inside of me, it's deepened my sense of self, because it's reliable. It's always like there in the chaos of life for me to lean on. And Mommy Shark is originally a response to unsolicited parenting advice, trying to date as a single parent, basically like a sort of a stream of consciousness, like a clear purging of emotions on paper. It has become something else and it has evolved into many different things. But originally, it was like this get off of me. I'm doing just fine the way I am. So, to answer your question, because its origin was from a place of defending my motherhood, it was also from a place of defending my daughter. So how that's evolved and how Mommy Shark continues to evolve is because at the core of it, I'm giving myself permission to just not conform to anyone else's idea of parenting, to just be like the person I am and the mom that I am, and to not be afraid of that. And therefore, it strengthens my sense of self, but it strengthens like the protection of myself and my daughter. So it's really juicy in that sense. So if people are looking to heal or like looking to tap into a part of themselves, because I know people are starved of connection. So people are looking to connect with others and with themselves. Like, if you don't want to get up on stage and be a performer, like, that's not for everyone. But if you want to, like, write, like, that's a really great way to get something out. Or if you want to, like, be vulnerable and you're tired of being disconnected and tired of everything happening around you, there are ways of just saying enough is enough and finding whatever works for you. If you have a supportive partner who you trust and you love, everything we're discussing can enter into the sexual space and the wellness space and the kinky wellness space and can heal you. It's a gift if you have a really supportive partner to do that with. If you don't have a partner, you can do it to yourself.
No, and that's the thing too. I think that we've moved into a situation where, when it comes to intimacy and vulnerability in the sexual space, we have kind of made it seem where you do need another person. But the reality is, you don't. You have to start with the groundwork first, which is you. You're the foundation, and you can build from yourself and connect with someone else. Because what happens is, I feel like if you haven't really done the work with yourself, that's when you can fall into the trap of molding to whoever you're with or losing your identity and kind of absorbing everyone else's around you.
That's true. And you can also like start to put their needs before yours and kind of, yeah, like abandon yourself and self-sacrifice because you just feel like so fulfilled by another. But actually, you do have to start with it yourself. That's why like masturbating can be like really, really therapeutic. But also, that's also why it's like really scary. Like, so many people are afraid to love themselves in that way, or at least, I don't know, I was for a large chunk of my life.
We're afraid to touch ourselves. I really feel like there is a sense of fear around actually touching our own body, but yet we're very encouraging with people to allow others to touch themselves. So we've jumped from you can't touch yourself, but let all these other random people or people you know touch you, but you can't touch yourself, which has become very confusing, especially with the female orgasm, because it's not like, oh, I can touch it for 2 seconds and you're gonna have this great orgasm. There is some time frame that goes into it, unlike our male counterparts, where they can get off very, very quickly if they wanted to. But yeah, I do feel like that's kind of fucked up how we've structured women to be like, yeah, you can go out, especially with the push of like hookup culture, and which is great if that's what you want to do, but make sure that you are not afraid to touch yourself first.
It's so sad. Like, it's like, again, conditioning or like life, or I don't know, but it like gets hold of you and like slowly like kills your spirit. 'Cause kids, like, they have no inhibition. So it's like And I was the same. Like, I used to touch myself all the time when I was a kid. But then as I grew and like went through puberty, it became something else. But when I started to actually just discover myself, that's a big step. And it's because I was eliminating years, or like I was like fighting against years of like not touching myself. And it's like, why? Like, why did I deprive myself of this experience for so long? And let other, that's right, and let others touch me.
And do it
And so,
unsuccessfully.
and do it because, because if you're not, so I think like all of these, like it's the self, like it begins with the self, and you have to know yourself or continue to get to know yourself. And as sad as it is, I think that is very rare in the culture we live in. People are walking around disconnected from their genitals, disconnected from their brains, just disconnected from their blood flow and their nervous systems. When I started to become connected to my nervous system, I realized very quickly how small my capacity is. And then I understood my anger. And then I understood how I was showing up as a mom. But being connected to my nervous system is amazing, but it's also scary. So now I used to think, oh, I have such a big capacity. I'm this empath. I love so deeply. And those things may be a part of me, but I have a small capacity. Oh my God, I can only do so much. Like, and I can't handle conflict very well because of trauma. And so not everyone is like that, but in the sexual space, in the performance space, I am like that. So one moment can mean the world. That the journey and the resistance, that can mean the world to me.
Well, I was going to say to your capacity limit, I also think that that's something that we've pushed on women to have more capacity than we kind of have this narrative where we have to have so much capacity for other people. But again, it comes back to where's the capacity for yourself? Like, where are you holding space for yourself? Where are you recharging after you've had all this capacity for everybody else? And we've forgotten to add that into the steps of how to keep yourself mentally and physically okay. Because, yeah, it's going to affect your nervous system. Inflammation is a big deal of people that hang on to their emotions and can't let them go. And your body is always telling you something. But, like you said, if you're disconnected, you can't hear that. You can't pick it up. And, like, it just chips away at you over time. Over time, you're going to be worn out.
Yeah, it starts to eat at you from the inside.
Like to the point about females faking orgasms and things. I've mentioned this on another podcast, but it's one of those things like don't fake it all the time, but there's different types of sex. So I always say like there's sex that you get. So like the more selfish sex, that's about you. And then there's sex where you come together and you
Together and
explore or
explore.
you heal or whatever you want to do with someone else. And then there's sex that you give, which is like, you know, if you're giving to your partner on their needs or their wants or their kinks or whatever they want to do. And that's where I feel like I don't mind faking orgasms is when it's in the performance aspect of someone else. 'Cause like I'm always for a good show. And I think that's what it is. And I kind of like getting that like very over and above type personality where, yeah, it's fake, but who cares? It's fun. Like, so. It's a time and a place, but don't do it all the time.
Yeah, no. And that's also playful, right? Like that's play. Like that's, and that's a kink, and it's like humor in sex. Like, like humor in sex can be really good. I remember like I had an experience. Oh my God. Okay. So, like, I got like this giant chocolate eclair.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know where this is going, but okay, yeah.
and like thought it would be funny to like, eat it in front of my partner in like this sexy outfit and like eat it the way that might not be sexy. That's as many details as I'll give you. But the point was we were having fun. Like it was play, and that is play, which is an element of performance. But I would say And I would always encourage people who are looking to tap into their vulnerability, who are looking to be vulnerable in the sexual space, that there is a difference between play and healthy play and not showing up truthfully and faking it. Because play can provide momentum and kink and turn-ons, whereas showing up just to show up and causes more disconnect. You have to be truthful. And when you honor yourself and when you're just vulnerable, like, again, that's power. So when you're faking something, or even like with men, like some men, they struggle with orgasms too, right? And that is a good indication that a man is searching for something deeper. You know, like if men are tired of porn in this generation, like my generation grew up with just fucking insane porn everywhere in their face in the age of the internet, and just like actually legitimately thinking that that's what sex with a woman was. If a man gets to a place where he's like, this isn't doing it for me anymore, like I don't, like I need something more fulfilling, then that might manifest in his body. And like when a man struggles to have an orgasm, like, you know, maybe an indication that they're looking for something deeper, or I don't know. But I like that, because men struggle with this as well. And I don't think men fake it. They can't fake it the way we can, maybe.
Yeah, no, Your point about the men getting deeper, that is a huge component of what I'm seeing, at least what I see, at least in the circles that we have and like just meeting people, is that there's this wrong narrative that men are so superficial, and we're judging the mass amount of men off a small percentage that are superficial. They're superficial people on both ends of the spectrum. But I feel like men have got this blanket statement of, oh, they just want sex, but that is not the case, at least that I see growing into like the 30s, 40s. That is not at all what I'm experiencing. So when there's narratives going out there, there's people going out there saying like men are trash, men are this, men are that, that's far from the case. They're just really, I feel like they're lonely, at least what I can see in my work. And it's in the studies that are coming out, they're lonely, they're unable to express their opinions. And then when they do, if they say one wrong word, it's like they're burned at the stake for it. They're like, ah, see, blah, blah, blah. And people just like go apeshit.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. Like when society calls someone or something and labels something, there's a huge danger there too, because then, you know, men could potentially start to believe that about themselves. Like, oh, well, you're a monster. You're stupid. You're superficial. Then if that's said enough to a certain person, they could start to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that is sad. So there's that. But then there's also like I'm seeing is, yes, men are lonely and they're beautiful creatures. Like men are, you know, worthy of love and gorgeous people. And like they're suffering, like, and so they need support is what I'm seeing. And in this day and age, fucking chicks be crazy too. So it's like, I don't care. I don't have no issue saying that there's an issue with the dating culture. And I'm saying this because I see a lot of cutthroat behavior. I see a lot of zero tolerance, bananas town bullshit in the dating culture when people aren't even connected to themselves. So when someone is connected to themselves and they're looking for a solid partner, it's very hard when everyone's like treading water in a cesspool of fuckery do, and no one knows what the hell they want or how to get it. I'm like, damn, that's fucking hard. Like no one knows how to get what they want. Everyone's disconnected to themselves. I want no part in it. I want no part in that.
Well, what I'm seeing with the dating culture is that we're not, it's interesting because we're on this thing where we're not going to labor ourselves as together. There's a lot more, we're just talking and chit-chatting and no one wants to like, quote unquote, get into committed relationships because they want to keep their options open. And
yeah, you feel fuck like, that. Fuck
yeah,
that.
I don't feel like that's going to work. Like people leave confusion. That's where feelings get hurt.
People are lying to themselves. And someone will for sure be like, no, I'm not lying to myself. And that's fine. But for me, when I see this kind of thing happening, my opinion is that won't work. No one has the time for that. And if you do have the time for that, then fill your boots.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, but it's like life, like you got to move and life moves fast and you have to be able to rise for yourself. You can't accept fucking breadcrumbs from people because you're doing a disservice to yourself. Everyone's worthy. Everyone's a queen. Everyone's a king. You just have to allow yourself to be. And so, okay, yeah, you don't want to label something. Well, I'm sorry. I am a woman. I am a queen. I am a mother. I want a fucking label because you need to be so proud of me. Otherwise, I don't want you in my life. You need to claim me and I need to claim you. This nonsense of blah, 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 blah. No, that's not for me.
Well, to the problem with not labeling anything is that I don't think that we're doing a service with communication. We're a generation that prides itself on quote communication, but then we won't communicate our own boundaries when it comes to our relationship. Instead, we just leave it open and just hope for the best. And that's when people are getting hurt. And that's because we won't communicate and we're scared. I think that there's a fear between being like, this is what I want. This is what the structure I need. And there's nothing to be fearful for asking for structure or commitment at all.
Yeah, I know. Anyone who's like in tune with themselves or like respects themselves with want, you want someone to show up as their best self. But I do think like as someone who used to experience this and went through this experience, I was like, oh, well, I'll just do that. I'll just hold out hope and hope for the best and, you know, maybe abandon myself a little bit because at least that way I'm showing up as like a supportive woman or I'm showing up as like a submissive woman. No, no. Like these are expectations that actually, and I guess I can only speak for myself, you get to call the shots in how you're treated and like you get to call the shots in your life. And so when I realized that, I was like, yay. Yay, I will never settle for something that's less than I deserve. I will never, never submit because the person for me, like it's not any less feminine of me to claim my standard. And I think to bring it back to what we're talking about, manifests itself in my body and in my thinking, and then I make a play of it. But like that's how I know that I might be able to get others to connect with me. And then you can generate things like discourse and conversation, and it is a performance, but it's always coming from a place of truth. Just like in sex, in kink, and in that, and you know, in the therapy of pleasure. It's pleasurable for me. Like I get off on performing in front of people, but I want to show up the same way I show up on stage in the sexual space or like in a relationship context by being truthful and vulnerable with myself. That's like the goal, if there is an end goal, to be courageous enough to be vulnerable.
I feel like this conversation, I loved it. But is there anything else that you'd like to give advice?
If someone wants to perform, or if someone has asked them to perform or something, even like a small context, the best advice I could give would be to believe that everything you need is in you. And all you have to do is listen to yourself. Because no matter how weird you are, no matter how, like, whatever comes out, if you're showing up for yourself in an honest way, the world loves that and the world loves you.
Oh, that's so cute. Well, absolutely. I actually agree with that. And where can my listeners find you if they want to reach out and get to know more about what you do?
Yeah, so oh my gosh, I have an Instagram. It's at Evie Jonestown, but I think my website would be the best, which is www.genevievejonesrights.com. And then I'm always posting stuff on my stories about the next shows that I have. So they could find me through my website, and maybe my Instagram, I would say.
Wonderful. Well, for my listeners, you guys know what to do. As always, stay kinky, and I'll see you on Wednesday.